Can't you see this is the land of confusion? And with you today is the generation that is no longer confused. You are listening to We Are Libertarians, a podcast focused on issues, current events, and philosophy from the perspective of a young libertarian. I'm your host, Chris Galt. Joining us today is my co-host, Chris Spangle.
Good afternoon.
And we have a special guest with us today, Jeremiah Hodgkin.
What's up?
All right. Creighton, it's spring break in college life, and Creighton's went on a nice vacation to some beach somewhere. So we'll be back again with us next week. I've been hearing a lot about libertarians online talking about the difference between Gary Johnson and Ron Paul. And is there really a big difference? Who's more libertarian? I hear this debate a lot, and I recently, today, on Reddit, just saw the ACLU Liberty Watch report. It ranked the candidates, all the candidates on on how they deal with civil liberties. Gary Johnson won, according to the ACLU, is the most friendly to civil liberties.
Is that a good thing if the ACLU says you win?
I'm not sure. But they gave Obama second place and Ron Paul third place, and very close, top three. So
really? Paul lost to Obama on civil liberties.
Yeah. Let's go through this.
Okay. And if you want to join in with us, we'll post this on our Facebook page. Go to wearelibertarians.com, and it'll forward you to the Facebook page. We'll have the report card up there on this post.
And also, we'll start a poll that we want you to choose: Gary Johnson, Ron Paul, or Obama. Who protects liberties the most? The first category they had was voter suppression. They gave 4 out of 4 stars to Obama, and
he's really good at suppressing voters. What does that mean?
And they have no stated position for the other two, so no, they got 0 out of 4.
All right, so candidate suppression basically is Barack Obama is blocking the South Carolina law that would require photo IDs at the polls.
Right.
He leads a Justice Department that is a vocal advocate of equal access to the ballot. I don't know how you guys feel about voter ID. I'm personally a fan of it. I think that if you can go to the liquor store, the movie store, or any place to buy pretty much anything, you show an ID. Why wouldn't you show an ID at the polls?
Yeah, I'm with you there, Chris. I think a lot of other people disagree. Jeremiah, do you have a different opinion?
It's just adding a new layer, a new law, a new regulation on top of something that was supposedly supposed to be just and pure anyway. So how about we just reform it and actually enforce the laws that are already on the books, instead of adding new stuff? See if we can fix it before we just keep, we throw another coat of paint on it.
Yeah, I think a new coat of paint for right now is a good thing, though. It's pretty rusty.
Yeah.
I think voter ID is a good thing, though.
I know Texas and a couple other states actually just shot down their voter ID law. Indiana has actually gone to the Supreme Court, fought it in the Supreme Court, and won because of several equal access issues. So it's a trend that's going around the United States, but it's one that other states are trying, but they have looser laws on how they have stricter laws on how to get a voter ID, how to get an ID. So Indiana, actually, it's pretty easy to get an ID, and I know that the Secretary of State's office, if you need an ID, will go and get one for you and deliver it. I mean, they're easy access.
But then it also goes back on the fact that when this country was founded, there wasn't equal voting laws everywhere in every state. So there used to be requirements you had to be a property owner or so on and so forth. I'm not saying that should come back. But so if we're always going to be talking about states' rights here and there, why not do the same thing with voting laws?
What do you mean?
Well, as far as each state can kind of decide how they want to do it.
No, they do.
I mean, just all the way down, if they want to do the voter ID act, so they're giving, Obama this 4-star thing.
Right.
Back to ACLU.
Yeah, and actually, that's not a bad point once we got there. But it basically was the fact that that Barack Obama is getting more torches because he's suing states because they have voter ID. He's blocking laws in states that require voter ID because of "quote unquote" civil liberty issues.
So the ACLU isn't there are not constitutionalists there.
Their
version
think?
Of civil liberties
right.
has nothing to do with the Constitution.
Well,
right.
Also a lot of the voter ID negativity is it affects minorities, saying that it's harder for minorities for some odd reason to get an ID. I'm guessing they're most likely talking about illegal immigrants. That's one of the big things. Even I think the NAACP is also come out and spoke about this.
They've fought Indiana's law for a long time because in Indiana there are almost no complaints about it. There was sort of an infamous case in southern Indiana where 9 nuns the first year showed up without their IDs and they couldn't vote. But if you show up to the polls to vote and you don't have an ID, you can fill out a provisional ballot. You fill out that provisional ballot, they keep it for you. You go within, I think, 10 days to the county clerk, and then you fill out a real ballot and then your vote counts. So it's not as if you're really being disenfranchised in Indiana, at least.
All right, so I guess most of us would disagree with ACLU and how voter suppression is libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, talking about minorities, the next category is racial profiling. They gave Gary Johnson a perfect 4. They gave Obama a 2 and Ron Paul a 2.
And let's go through these. Gary Johnson, for racial profiling, he got 4 torches because he believes the TSA should identify high-risk individuals for invasive pat-downs and full-body scans versus using racial profiling of the general population. He opposes Arizona's anti-immigration law, SB 1070, saying it's going to lead to racial profiling. I don't know how you determine one individual from another. Is it color of skin? As to whether one is an American citizen or the other is an illegal immigrant. And Barack Obama got 2 torches because he signed the Fair Sentencing Act, taking the first positive steps toward correcting guidelines that led to significant racial disparities in sentencing for crimes. He has consistently challenged state laws that invite racial profiling by requiring law enforcement officers to check the immigration status if they suspect illegal entry. Now here's where he fails and why they gave him 2 off. This is Barack Obama. He failed to remedy civil rights problems with the immigration enforcement program's secure communities, and he failed to reform guidance regarding the use of race in federal law enforcement, which allows racial profiling in national security and border integrity investigation. On Ron Paul, he got 2 torches for racial profiling because he opposes Islamophobia and the racial profiling of Muslims, and said in heck of a line. Said in September 2010, this blame of all Muslims for the atrocities of 9/11 only makes things worse. He has denied he was the author of racist and discriminatory statements against African Americans, Jewish Americans, and gays and lesbians in newsletters published under his name in the 1980s and 90s.
And so, by denied, they actually proved who it was. And now that I'm, you know, sitting here talking in front of a microphone, I can't remember his name, but he's actually, I think, an editor on a pretty big newspaper. And
I think he works for Forbes.
I can't think of the guy's name. Forbes.
Yeah, he works for Forbes now, and he was the editor. He didn't actually write them. So let's start with Ron Paul and talk about Ron Paul and the two, the one that they strike. They obviously are against any racial profiling against Muslims. And they take a pretty strong stance against SB, this is the Civil Liberties Union, ACLU, and they take a strong stance against the Arizona law, and obviously they dinged Ron Paul for his newsletters. So I don't really know a lot about the newsletters. I sort of know that he didn't really personally write most of them.
Actually, and good luck finding a copy of them, too.
Really?
I've seen quotes of the racist remarks.
You can see little tiny quotes. Good luck finding them.
Does that mean that people are making it up, or does that mean that Ron Paul scrubbed them?
Taken out of context. They weren't popular back then, and that there wasn't a whole lot of
Right. A newsletter for you kids. a newsletter for you kids out there is a blog on paper.
And it wasn't popular. It was small. It wasn't put. It was never copied over. So if you can find them, you can find them. Ron Paul, even back then, didn't really think they were all that great. He didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to them.
If something's being done in my name, I want to know what's going out there.
There was a lot of great stuff in there, but he had a whole bunch of different authors. It's like he had other things to do. He couldn't sit there and lord over it. He assumed that people would do a decent job, and he would know if anything was crazy. Well, there was no backlash back then, so it's just, I guess, a current issue now.
Well, most of the stuff I saw in them weren't that racist. I mean, like, it was just like,
why'd you get out your calculator and like, oh, divided by 2. That seems less racist than I thought.
I mean, he was just talking about crime in D.C., and he was profiling.
Right.
I mean, he was making a point, but it wasn't like he wasn't trying to be racist.
He who?
He was, or Ron Paul.
Right. But he didn't write them. And this is my point, is he's saying
Fair enough. He
didn't say that, but if it's being done
in
your name,
it's being said. I don't think it's as big of a deal as they're making it out to be.
I mean, everything that comes out in Forbes magazine, so we hold that, you know, Forbes accountable for everything.
There are a lot of things that columnists say that...
Sure.
They're not held accountable for.
The difference is that those come out in the Economist name and not the person's name. So, like I said, I really don't know a lot about it. I'm just trying to push you guys a little bit to see, you know, if your arguments stand up.
Let's put it this way. The letters, from what little we've actually been allowed to see of them or shown, isn't inherently racist. It's barely even considered racism. It's just kind of a little offensive.
Said the three white guys.
Thank you.
If we can just move past the...
All right.
So move past the newsletters. Yeah. And let's talk about racial profiling at the airport, because this seems to be a consistent theme with all three of them. They all oppose racial profiling at the airport. So instead of invasive pat-downs for all Americans, some people believe that we should pick people who are Muslim out of the crowd and profile them. There also is several other techniques, the Israeli technique, where they pick a person and they question them. They have highly trained questioners, and that seems to work for the Israelis. But you would end up getting a highly proportional amount of Muslim Americans being questioned. So where do you guys come down on it?
I mean, I think it's an equality issue. Mm-hmm. I think they should all be treated the same way. But scientifically, I mean, profiling works. That's a fact. It works for police officers. It works for TSA agents. You have to be equal with everyone. You can't.
Right.
You can't pick people out of the crowd like that.
Profiling.
If you're going to do it to one person every 10 people, you should do it to everybody.
Yeah, because it's easy when you're not part of the group that's being profiled to say that.
Right.
You know?
Well, not that I'm supporting what the TSA does, but if they do something to someone, it should be done to everyone.
Right.
Well, equal application under the law. If the one way to do it is individual responsibility. I mean, if you want to get on a plane and you want to take that risk, let the companies decide on their own security measures. If they want to say, well, you can fly and you can also carry your handgun with you, get on the plane and fly, but there's no security and people want to pay for that, fine. Then, I mean, you could bring up the issue, yeah, well, what if somebody hijacks a plane and runs it into a building? Well, I'd like to see somebody try to hijack a plane full of armed people. I mean, we were trying to put marshals on there thinking one marshal's going to do something. If you have a whole plane full of guys with concealed carry permits, I would fly on that plane. I would feel much safer.
Jeremiah is one of those libertarians.
He is. I would still.
He's like, I dare you to come over here. I have a bazooka on this plane.
And I ask someone if they
know. I mean, that's the same thing they're saying with putting a marshal on there, an arm and a marshal or just a pilot. So the passenger is just cattle being herded from here to there. They have no choice.
Jeremiah's the only person with an RPG inside a plane.
I can neither confirm nor deny the...
Well,
go ahead.
The next subject is humane immigration policy. They were pretty even on that one. Johnson got 3 and the other two got 2. So anybody?
Yeah, and for Gary Johnson, he supports the DREAM Act, which provides access to higher education and military service for many regardless of immigration status, and opposes the completion of a border fence. For Ron Paul, let me see. Losing my papers here. He opposes the completion of the border fence and opposes privacy intrusions in the anti-immigration law and wants to end birthright citizenship and effectively repeal the 14th Amendment for one class of people. For the statist party, Barack Obama, he expanded secure communities. He supports the DREAM Act. He deported 1.1 million people in 3 years, the most of any administration.
Wow.
Which I think most conservatives would kind of find that fact interesting.
But they constantly report on how much he's, you know, taken away from ICE and closing programs.
Right. The ACLU actually dinged him for deporting illegal immigrants. So so that leads to maybe let's talk about the border fence. How do you control immigration? Are you guys for a border fence?
Negative. Physical security is not really all that great because you can always get around a fence. Illegal immigrants shouldn't have an impact on a country. Because if they come over here, if they're a legal immigrant or a legal immigrant, if they commit a crime, that's still a crime no matter what. So, you know, if we ended how loose some of our welfare programs are, how, you know, some of our benefit programs work, that we'd only give those to people that applied or, you know, legal citizens, then you might not have the problem with all of them wanting to come over here.
Sure.
And if a business owner wants to hire cheap labor, more power to them. That's how the free market works.
But Jeremiah, America's the best country in the world. Everybody's going to come here immediately. We'll have an overflow of people.
So why is China having a problem hiring enough people? They hire millions of people and they can't.
Where are those people going to go if we open our borders? What about the people who live here now?
What about it?
That
was a good argument. He gotcha. What about it?
Well, don't they have a right to live here just as much as they do? And if they come over here and flood it?
I mean, are they going to take our land? Are they going to take our property?
They'll have to come over here.
If they're taking our jobs, how are we going to work to feed
our jobs?
Family?
Why do we own our jobs?
They took our jobs.
I mean, they don't own our jobs. No, the
just playing devil's advocate.
The person that owns the jobs or owns who they get to give the jobs to is the business owner and no one else. If you want to hire whatever you want, if you only want to hire 5'2" tall people, that's up to you.
There are places in Alabama where they have they passed an Arizona-like immigration bill in Alabama or Mississippi, one of the two states. I think it was Alabama. And they can't find anybody to work in a lot of the produce industry in Alabama because there's no labor, because the illegal immigrants are not going to Alabama because they're afraid of going to Alabama. So it would have an effect. I mean, I personally don't think that a border fence makes any kind of sense, because I remember a conservative from the Orange County area in 2010. He was running for Congress, and he went down to the border fence, and he filmed a commercial saying, "We need to finish this fence. We need to build this fence." And as he walked along the fence, there was a patch in every single slab of that fence. Because so many people had come up with blowtorches and had run through the fence that they had gone in and patched the fence in every single section of the fence. And I just thought it was the funniest thing. Like, if you're making the video, don't you see the giant patches in the video? You're arguing for building a fence and there are patches in it. You know, and I just – people are going to get around that fence, and I don't even know what the wireless fence is or any of that BS. The reason immigration is so screwed up is the federal government runs it.
Yeah, everything the federal government runs is pretty screwed up. I don't know how I feel about the border yet. I don't think the fence thing would work either, but I'm not open borders like Jeremiah, so I'm not really sure.
Well, it all goes down to what's a man-made line in the sand. I mean, really? I mean, is there anything? We all own property. I mean, we create our own borders based on what property we own personally. And the government, yeah, I understand broad boundaries as far as what they control and everything else like that. But, I mean, what about international waters? I mean, what if somebody comes out of international waters and ours? Are we going to build a fence there, too? Are we going to have, you know, boats patrolling, making sure little life crafts don't come in all the way around our country? What about Canada? And they did a report saying a lot of illegal immigrants come in through Canada from other countries, from Europe, from Eurasia, and things like that. Do you want to build a fence up there, too? Where do you stop? And then where do you stop telling people they can't come here?
If you have any comments or criticism or you want to answer Jeremiah's question, go to wearelibertarians.com and let us know on our Facebook page. You know, I think that this is one of those arguments that is, I think there's a tinge of bigotry to it sometimes. And I do think that it is a divisive issue that the two sides use to raise donations. Sometimes there are issues that really not much is going to happen in the public policy arena, but they love to use it to divide people and to raise money for their campaigns. And I think this is kind of one of those issues.
Let's move on to some later ones. Some that are a lot different. The freedom to marry for gay couples. Gary Johnson and Obama did really well, but Ron Paul did not, according to the ACLU.
Really?
Johnson got a perfect 4, Obama got a 3, and Ron Paul got a 1.
And they describe in it that for Gary Johnson, he opposes the Federal Defense of Marriage Act. For Barack Obama, for marriage equality, instructed the Justice Department in February of 2011 to stop defending DOMA and opposes a constitutional ban on same-sex marriage, but does not support marriage equality. And for Ron Paul,
He supports the defense of marriage.
He supports DOMA as a matter of states' rights and opposes a federal constitutional marriage amendment. Can you guys talk about DOMA?
Yeah, DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, it basically defines marriage as between a man or a man and a woman.
On the federal level.
On the federal level, but leaves the other decisions up to the states.
So do you view this as an issue? Like, I mean, sometimes some libertarians make the argument, and I don't really, I mean, I'm admit being a bit Mitt Romney on this issue and having my foot in both camps. Some libertarians will argue that we need to have marriage equality now because that's the right thing to do now. It's a matter of fairness and equality. Other libertarians will argue, I'm not going to argue for that. You may be wrong, you may be right, and I support you, but I'm not going to argue for government marriage of any kind, and I'm going to continue to fight for no government marriage of any kind. So where do you guys fall in that spectrum?
That's you know, freedom now or incrementalism. And that's always a very tough choice because it's a fine line between do you continue to let people suffer or do you kind of compromise and then lose all your momentum, have to wait even longer, but then yet give more powers and permissions to the government. But as far as personally where I stand, I say I would support abolishing definitions from the federal government. It always all comes back to equal application under the law. Marriage, I guess in the state's eyes, the way they see it, the only reason they're involved is for insurance and splitting of the property and, you know, civil cases and stuff like that, is that, well, it's two human beings going into a contract. The government oversees it, defines the contract. Who cares what kind of people? I mean, are we going to start limiting how tall people can be when they get married?
Let's hope not. I mean,
as a man of smaller stature, Galt.
I mean, I'm all with you right here. I mean, marriage is a religious sacrament. It shouldn't be in government at all. Should be definitely between the individual contract law. That's how.
I agree with you, but that's something that's not going to happen for maybe 10, 20,
well,
30 years.
That,
I mean, what about people right now who love each other and want to put their stuff together?
That's what your definition was. It was, I'm working for the end goal, but I'm still on your side. You can fight the battle from two fronts.
Ah, so you went all Mitt Romney on me, too. You're saying, I'm going to fight for
no,
both.
No, they're both in. You can be a directionalist libertarian or an end game.
Right.
You got to be. You don't have to live in a utopia to advance society.
Right.
So,
well, honestly,
we can work on the
who
way there.
Really wants to get married these days anyway? I mean,
oh, I don't know.
Really?
Most of America?
I don't know. Didn't they say divorce rate was higher than marriage rate last year?
It might have been.
I think I heard that.
But I think as far as from like a gay standpoint, is that they can work around a system. You can make your own contract law and be contract. I mean, part of it I see is that people have this desire to be labeled by society or the government in a certain fashion.
Okay.
I mean,
off the rails.
No, it's not going off the rails, but you can still get, they can still accomplish what they want to accomplish. If there's a company that won't allow them benefits when they're in a contract law together, you go after the company. You can change things through the market. If an insurance provider won't let you be on the same plan, you go after the insurance provider, not the federal government. Because that's just a bunch of more law, bunch of more regulations, and it's just a big mess. Go after it on an individual basis. You'll get way more done, way quicker, and then it'll trickle up and eventually hit federal law.
So, Ron, what is Ron Paul's reasoning for supporting DOMA? I know that so many libertarians give Bob Barr a crummy time for helping pass DOMA, but I was surprised Ron Paul supports it too.
I'm not quite sure, Spangle, why he supports it. I don't agree with Ron Paul on everything, and this is one of the things I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I would say it's because he's trying to win as a Republican, and you got to sell it on a couple things to be a Republican.
I would disagree with the whole sellout thing. There was something about DOMA and something else in it. I remember reading through his book. It was, in Liberty Defined. Don't have that in front of me. About why he supported it. It was something about the bill and how it was written. He didn't necessarily agree with the definition and the government defining it, but there was something else about the bill, which we all know in the government.
Is it the fact that crossing state lines, if you get gay marriage in Massachusetts, that you're forcing Indiana to recognize it?
That was one of the points, yes.
Okay.
is that it was upholding states' rights.
Right. So the DOMA law is protecting states' rights because you're not forcing one state to recognize a law in another, and it's, you know.
Correct.
Right. God forbid. So sometimes, I mean, in my opinion, sometimes things are just what's right is right, you know, and libertarians get caught up on that technicality stuff. Like,
yep.
You know, so.
Well, the only other one on here is, that I think of is any note is the ending of surveillance state. Johnson got a 3. Obama got a 0. And Paul got a 4.
Okay.
The reasonings behind that were Gary Johnson only thinks that the Patriot Act should be allowed to expire. That's why he didn't get a perfect 4, because he's not for repealing it. He's just for letting it end. Obama voted for all the reauthorizations and extensions, saying that it's an important tool for us to continue dealing with this ongoing terrorist threat about the Patriot Act. And then Paul, everybody knows that Paul's big for surveillance. So TSA, the Patriot Act. So that's why he got a perfect.
I thought this quote from Ron Paul was noteworthy in the explanation. During a November 2011 GOP debate in D.C., he said, "If you advocate the police state, yes, you can have safety and security, and you might prevent a crime, but the crime will then be against the American people and against our freedoms."
Wow.
Which is perfectly defined as far as what the Patriot Act does. It's Benjamin Franklin's quote, "Those who are willing to give up a little freedom for a little security will gain neither and lose both." And that's what we've kind of done with the Patriot Act. You've seen the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, grow exponentially since 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And just all the security. And so you got the fusion centers. And I don't want to sound like a conspiracy nut, but all the profile and all the lists you see coming out. If you buy cash, coffee with cash and so on and so forth. I mean, we've got so many labels on us now, it's not even funny. I mean, they just released the PDF of all the words they're watching on Twitter and Facebook.
Can you explain what a fusion center is? Because I don't know if a lot of people understand what that is.
True. A fusion center is usually a regional center where they tie in all forms of law enforcement, from FBI, local police force, state police force, DHS, just everybody in one big data sharing center.
FBI, there's actually one in the basement of the State House of Indiana. So we have a fusion center here. And a fusion center in Missouri, if you remember the infamous report back in 2008, 2009, about how anybody with a Ron Paul or a Libertarian Party bumper sticker
or a veteran
might be considered a domestic terrorist, that came out of a fusion center. But let me ask you this, Jeremiah, like having all this law enforcement cooperating together, why is that a bad thing?
Because it's a state versus people. They're not protecting us. They're protecting themselves. That's why when they watch anti-government people, that's why a while back when they were really going after Anonymous, they were, you know, going after people that – looking out for people that have bought Guy Fawkes masks. They're more about protecting the state and their corporate interests through different politicians and everything else than they are about protecting the people. Same thing with local law enforcement these days. They're more worried about creating revenue and protecting their own policies and politicians than they are protecting the actual people.
How many Guy Fawkes masks do you own?
7, and I'm getting a custom metal one.
All right. I knew it.
Well, Jeremiah, being all conspiratorial, let's talk about the Republican primary.
Okay.
And we'll post the ACLU.
Yeah, because there were a couple other topics we didn't talk about. Closing Guantanamo?
Guantanamo.
I can't say it. Bay. And indefinite detention. Don't ask, don't tell. Ending torture. And reproductive choice. So check out some of the rankings.
We'll post
for
it online, and then we'll ask your guys' opinions. But I heard numerous counts of voter fraud last Tuesday and this weekend. On Reddit, on Facebook, I've watched Clark County in Georgia. There's a video of their delegate convention. Basically, all the Ron Paul people get shut out. They have a majority, and the GOP leaders get up and tell them, basically, you're not allowed to talk. Mm-hmm. And then they end it. So there have also been some interesting numbers coming out of Alabama. The popular vote in Alabama isn't even close to the delegate vote. Ron Paul got 75,000 delegate votes, but he only got 30,000 in the popular vote, where Mitt Romney got 178 in his popular vote and 162,000 in his delegate vote. So they're pretty close. So why would someone not vote for Ron Paul in the popular vote, but vote for his delegates? Or was the popular vote manipulated? I mean, who knows? From the looks of it, Ron Paul probably received 75,000 votes in the popular vote if it should tie up to his delegate count.
And then he got how many again?
He only got 30,000.
Okay.
So he got less than half.
40,000 votes is sort of that's a lot.
It's a large number.
It's a lot of
votes
to kind of, you know, hide in your desk drawer, though.
So, well, and then I know a lot of Ron Paul people that won't vote.
That makes a lot of sense.
They don't want to. I know a lot of people are doing the whole delegate thing, but they're not going to participate in a primary.
But 40,000 of the 75,000 people. I mean, on the ballot to vote for delegate, it says votes for delegate candidates pledged to someone other than the voter's choice for president are not allowed under Republican Party rules. So they're not even allowed to do that.
I mean,
that.
It's hard to say. Is it a hanging Chad? I mean,
do they have Chads?
And then, and with a lot of the other Ron Paul stuff, I notice a lot of them sensationalized stuff. I see a lot of Ron Paul people saying half-truths, making them out to be way bigger than they are. It's really hard to say. I can understand him having very little support nationwide because you don't have a whole lot of voter turnout, especially in primaries. But then you've got a very like Fox News, CNN type population where they're not going to come out and vote for Ron Paul. I mean, a lot of Ron Paul supporters, we kind of put ourselves in this little box and we don't really look at the outside world. We're in a room with no windows.
Well, I don't think 40,000 people did that in Alabama, but I see it as either the popular vote's rigged, the ballot machines didn't validate the ballots, or the voters didn't read the rules. The only problem I see with that one is why didn't that happen to the other candidates
not just Ron Paul? Because you're not one person's voters are not disproportionately, you know,
right,
lax in their attention deficit.
And the news always talks about how Ron Paul voters always vote. They'll be it's snowstorming, look for a good Ron Paul finish.
Right.
So
there's one thing as a libertarian I can say to Ron Paul supporters is we told you so. They want to participate in this two-party system and play with two corrupt parties. For them to expect anything less than the corruption they're seeing, I'm not going to really make a big deal out of it. It's should have been supporting a different party.
It's something that I'm the same way. I was at the 2008 convention when they locked out roughly 370 Ron Paul delegates at the state convention. And, you know, I they did that across the nation. That didn't just happen in Indiana, and it's happening again this year.
Exactly.
As I talk to people across the state of Indiana, because I have a lot of contact with Ron Paul delegates who are going to the Republican state convention, and they're getting challenged left and right. I mean, people who have voting records as Republicans but are known Ron Paul supporters, they're getting challenged, and they really don't have a basis to challenge some of these people. I mean, there is an argument that if you're a county chair and someone new shows up on the voter rolls and wants to go to the state convention and they don't have a voting history with your party, you ask them a few questions. But what I don't understand is why the Republican Party across the nation and in Indiana is so quick to throw new Republicans out, even if they're Ron Paul supporters. Like, what is it about the party that doesn't want these people in their party? I don't get it.
But isn't it up to them? I mean,
it's up to them.
It's a party function. It's a private party.
If Republicans, a primary is a closed party business, a function funded by the taxpayers. And if they don't want them, then welcome home. I mean, Big L's will always welcome you. I mean, we need help
I think that's the main lesson we're learning here in this Republican primary. Even some counties, local counties here close to central Indiana, there are some Tea Party guys who are wanting to get involved and run for office and everything else. And the local GOP threw them out and said, no, we don't want you there.
And you're right. It's not even just Ron Paul people. It's Tea Party people across the board. I hear that a lot from Tea Party people.
And instead of getting up on their own two feet and running themselves or finding a different platform or a different way to run, not a different party, they're fighting the GOP. So they're wasting a lot of time and effort when it wouldn't take too much, especially in a town where a libertarian mayor candidate got 42%. where they're still trying to fight to get on the GOP ticket.
Yeah, but Jeremiah, libertarians can't win.
Well, I mean, if you want to say you're going to have a bad day and you have a bad day, I guess you either predicted the future or you made it happen. So, I mean, if everyone that said libertarians can't win actually voted for who they thought was best, not necessarily for the libertarian, but voted for who they thought was best, we'd be in a much different country right now.
Right. And I think Ron Paul supporters hear that too all the time. Like, oh, he can't win, so I ain't going to vote for him.
Yep.
Well, then you've also got the write-in people who think that their write-in votes are going to be counted.
We talked about that last week.
Yeah, Creighton is dead set. He's not dead set. He's like, I'm not going to say I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. Well, I'm not going to say I'm not. I'm like, well, I am going to say you're an idiot if you do that.
Well, every week we'll be talking to him, so maybe we can knock some sense into him.
Convert him to the right side of sanity.
Let's keep this Ron Paul theme going just a little bit longer. I've heard a lot of supporters talk a lot recently about Jesse Benton, Ron Paul's campaign manager. Mm-hmm. He's also his grandson-in-law. I've heard a lot of supporters on Ron Paul forums and on Facebook calling for his removal because of references in a Time article where he said the Texas representative might be entitled by serving as a presidential advisor, a cabinet position, or for someone in his orbit, or perhaps a vice presidency, in reference to Mitt Romney and deal-making. Many supporters are thinking he's trying to sell out and join Mitt Romney's side and take a position. How do you guys feel about that?
Ron Paul's not going to give up. He's not going to stop. He's going to keep fighting to win. But if he doesn't win the primary, wouldn't it behoove him, the movement and everyone, for him to get somewhere as high up as possible? I mean, I would vote for whoever had him on their staff or as a VP or something because I want him higher up in government to do things. But if he just, you know, stands strong, doesn't make any kind of deals, you know, even he's going to always try to fight to win. But if he doesn't make a deal and he doesn't get anywhere, well, he's no longer going to be a congressman after his term's up. And then he's no longer in government. So we completely lose Ron Paul.
So we asked this question last week, so let's ask it of you. If he's Mitt Romney's running mate, will you vote for Mitt Romney?
I won't vote for Republicans.
Okay.
Even though your whole spiel right there just said you'd rather have Ron Paul in.
Well, I mean, I'm not going to vote for Republicans because I work on a libertarian campaign.
Okay.
So I'm going to hold. Okay. You know, I want to keep that. You know.
Well, something else Benton also said, he said supporters are beginning to feel, he said this, supporters are beginning to feel co-opted because the campaign is selling out, or feels like the campaign is selling out. So he's trying to get those shadows cast away that they're not selling out. Even if he does sell out, Jeremiah said that's fine, it's a good political move.
He's not selling out necessarily if he takes a position. Now, if he... on taking that position, the only thing that position's predicated on is him dropping out. That's a sellout.
Well, as libertarians, don't we stand on principle? I mean, I can't vote for Mitt Romney because of my principles. Even if Ron Paul's his running mate,
I don't support Ron Paul for Ron Paul. I support the revolution movement.
Right,
and
it's bigger than Ron Paul.
Right.
So losing Ron Paul doesn't do anything to us because we'll gain new people.
I would rather have Ron Paul in a cabinet position or something in the White House.
I would rather have five new representatives.
I'd rather have 10.
I mean, I'm just saying we gained. I know we got McClintock, we got Justin Amash in Michigan, we got Mike Lee in Utah just recently. We got Rand Paul in Kentucky.
I think this is part
if
of the problem.
If this happens again next election.
But this is part of the problem with the Ron Paul movement is that it's a very nascent political movement. And so you have a lot of people who are in politics for the first time. It's their first couple year in politics. And I'm cynical, so like the only time I've been outraged in the last month is when I found out KFC took mac and cheese off their menu. So like not much really outrages me anymore. But like politics, there is a certain way to play it. Like you have to compromise at a certain point. You don't compromise your principles. You have to keep your integrity, and you have to know where that line is. And Ron Paul has towed that line, but you also have to play the game a little bit. And political science is not, you know, necessarily a dirty science. It's really what you use it for, how you play it. And, you know, if he is going to start talking about trying to leverage his delegates into a position of influence in the administration that might win, I would think that most Ron Paul supporters would be glad about that, because I look at it, and for me, as a a person who's watched political campaigns since 1992, it's kind of over for Ron Paul. You know, they're pulling embeds out of his campaign. He may be a force at the convention, but as far as winning the primaries outright, it's over. He's not going to win the primaries. You know, he could be a force at the convention, and if you have that kind of leverage, why not use it?
And honestly, we can always bring this back to point. If he was truly 100% as principled as everybody thinks he is, he wouldn't have been supporting the Republican Party in any way, shape, and or form. And because him being there's, growing their voter bases, their contact lists, or probably bringing in more revenue. His ads are being played on major networks that none of us support and or watch. So he's compromised a lot already on these so-called principles we imbue on him, which he may or may not actually have.
He's been playing a game. But that, again, you're mixing your politics and your policy. I mean, his policy is, for most libertarians, spot on. And he brings together the six various types of libertarians. And they support him because he's consistent on his policy, and he's mostly libertarian.
Right, but I mean, from 99% of the supporters.
But when you start talking about politics, you have to play the game to a certain extent. And he is actually a very politically shrewd person. He wouldn't have started Campaign for Liberty and Young Americans for Liberty and other organizations, and bless those organizations, if he weren't politically shrewd. He wouldn't have put together the delegate strategy that they had.
Well, exactly. So that's why I was saying is that, if he was so perfect, because, I mean, it's not a horrible compromise if he was on Romney's staff, or not staff, but as his VP or whatever, then what things he supposedly have already compromised on.
So both of you guys think that Benton's call on trying to make a deal with Romney is fine? It's a good political move?
I mean, I'm not going to – I don't necessarily know one way or the other. I mean, like I said, you've got to play the game to some extent. You've got to have some influence. You can't just kind of bury your head in the sand. I don't know, Ron Paul Republicans listening to this may be tearing their hair out going, the two libertarians are beating up on the guy with the R next to his name. But, there is method to our madness, where we do lobby, we do put pressure on politicians to get certain things out of legislation. And, we play the game too, and you have to. It's politics. And so at this point, you really have to examine why you're – I mean, there's many other reasons why you might call for Jesse Benton's resignation, but that probably isn't one of them.
All right. Fair enough.
What do you think? You didn't answer the question.
Well, I'm not really going to agree with you guys here.
All right.
I don't think he should do that. I don't think it's a good move. I think I think you guys generalize his supporters pretty vaguely.
That's what humans do. We like
I'm
to
not
generalize.
Saying,
are you of the mindset that you want him to become a kingmaker and sort of rise above the libertarian movement and sort of lord over it and bless people? Is that what you're saying? Like, don't get involved in the next administration?
Is that a serious question?
Yeah, because no. That's what a lot of people have advocated for.
You put Ron Paul in a cabinet position or vice presidency, and they won't let him do anything. They'll let him do less than he can now. Mm-hmm. And I think he needs to continue to move to grow this movement and not worry about cabinet level positions and backroom deals and just stay principled for a little longer. I think that other people in this movement can carry the torch and banner after
what
him.
I'm saying is that he could be a part of it and still be principled. He could be a part of the cabinet and be principled.
But there's no benefit to joining the cabinet.
I think you're exactly right that he won't be listened to in any way, so what's the point in even playing in that
From the
that
movement
sandbox?
Standpoint, he would be in the White House. He would still be in government. If he just outright loses, Ron Paul lost twice. The whole movement's just, you guys lost twice. You didn't even get him in the cabinet position. Versus if he's in there, at least from not the supporter standpoint, but from the broad general population, we at least have a little victory.
How do you think Gary Johnson feels about this decision, or if they would to make this decision? Because Gary Johnson's put on his website, it's me, Ron Paul, and the message is what's important. It says Ron Paul on his website.
Yeah,
he's supporting support Ron him. Paul until he loses.
Well,
so what is Gary Johnson going to do if Ron
I
Paul?
I guarantee you, if somebody came down and said, do you guys? I mean, do you want to be VP? Do you think Gary Johnson would turn that down? The option to
no,
be,
but,
you know, No? So do you think he would also, he'd chastise Ron Paul for doing the same thing he would do?
No, but would Gary Johnson drop out?
No. What?
You don't think he would?
No, because this is the thing that a lot of Ron Paul supporters have to realize, and I'm not saying all, I'm saying a lot, because I'm tired of getting emails asking me to tell Gary Johnson to drop out. Like, I don't know Gary, quit emailing me. But, you know, a lot of LP state parties have their ballot access tied to the presidential race. So it's not fair for those people to not have ballot access for 4 years. And if you're going to be the guy, then be the guy. I mean, Gary's sort of already initiated the process. Why not go through with it? You can't just drop out. That's not how campaigns work at this level. You know, you can kind of just drop out of a city council race and nobody will notice. But when you're running for a party for a presidential race, you can't just drop out. You know, and once you've set things in motion, you've got to go. But I think that if Ron Paul were to do if he were to join the ticket or to join the cabinet in some way, I mean, a cabinet comes later on in the year, but if he were to join the ticket with Romney, it would be bad for Johnson.
But he would stay in the race, even though his message has been vote for Ron Paul.
Sure, because he wants to be the continuation of Ron Paul's message.
Well, you don't think this will hurt or make some more, even more Ron Paul supporters upset? And angry,
you know what? Maybe they'll be angry enough to join the Libertarian Party.
He still hasn't dropped out, even though he's the it's Romney.
But I'm
Paul
saying,
and
I'm
Johnson's
saying that Gary
running.
Johnson can't drop out. I'm saying that we're past a point of no return. It's just like Sarah Palin can't join the presidential race at this point. It's too late.
I don't see how it's any later for Johnson to drop out than it is for Romney than for Gingrich or Santorum.
Well, there'd be no way to replace Johnson, correct?
There are many other Libertarian presidential candidates. Am I wrong?
And at this point,
is there not a debate here in Indiana with Libertarian presidential candidates?
None of them will probably be as effective as Johnson.
Probably not, but
you know,
or most definitely not.
I mean, Gary Johnson will be debating in Indianapolis a week from Saturday. Lee Wright's Bill Still and Jim Burns, and there's RJ Harris in the race, and there's a couple other guys in the race. I mean, there's probably a dozen other presidential candidates, but I don't think they'll be as effective as Gary Johnson.
But
I mean,
Gary Johnson could still drop out, is my point.
Yeah, you're right. I'm saying that if he's the nominee after our convention, he can't drop out.
Okay.
Right.
Right. And when is the convention, Spangle?
That is the first weekend in May.
All right. Thank you. So we have, after the first weekend in May, we will know for sure.
Yep.
Maybe. And ours is on the 24th. Tickets are still for sale.
Attaboy.
We're going along with the presidential race. We mentioned Santorum.
Boo.
I refuse to talk about Santorum.
I think this is where we're going to highlight our new segment.
All right, so we've got a new segment. We want to highlight the biggest statist, the worst person in politics of the week. And we don't know what to call it, so I think we'll put up a poll on the Facebook page at wearelibertarians.com, and that'll forward you to the Facebook page. And we'll vote for the name. I said douchebag of the week.
Bigot of the week.
Bigot. We're not going to use bigot of the week, because that kind of pigeonholes us to just, you know, certain groups
of
people.
I would say frothiest person
no,
of the week.
No, we're not idiot. Frothiest person.
Idiot of the week.
Idiot of the week. So, we, you know, statist of the week. I don't know what we want to call it. But
it's pretty easy to guess who our first one's going to be.
Probably the first of many nominations.
Anyone listening could guess before I even say it.
It's Chris Galt.
It's Rick Santorum.
Okay. Oh, I was wrong. I didn't get the memo.
Nice try, though. I have some quotes of a couple things he said this week. Santorum told Puerto Rico Wednesday that they have to make English their official language if they want to become a state. obviously, Santorum has never read the Constitution. He says,
"Yeah,
you have to be English first. You can't be a state until."
But the Constitution's written in English.
Uh oh. What are, they have translated versions.
Do they? For politicians?
He also said, or he was also asked this question in a video I saw on Reddit today. He was asked, why did you vote for No Child Left Behind, Medicaid Part D, and five debt ceiling increases? And his answer was, vote for Ron Paul.
If
you're for limited government,
and
don't vote for me.
Yeah.
If you're against any of those things, just vote for Ron Paul.
If you're for a consistent conservative,
I'm not even going to try to win your vote. You're just vote for Ron
Paul.
They're
just not even pretending at this point.
And the guy didn't even introduce himself as a Ron Paul supporter. He just asked the question.
He's probably just so used to it. Ron Paul supporters have him so beat down.
He recognizes it straight from Ron Paul's ad on him. But
well, the Ron Paul tattoo on his forehead really tipped him off, though.
Whatever.
It's that time of the week, so let's promote some of the stuff that are coming up in the libertarian movement over the next week, or really the next month, so you can RSVP. What's coming up, Chris?
Well, we talked about last week. Tom Woods is coming up on April 21st at Purdue University, ISI, the Institute of... I have no idea, so never mind.
The Institute of
The Purdue Young Americans for Liberty is hosting the Tom Woods event. There's going to be some Cato speakers there, and they're going to talk about Federal Reserve and monetary policy. And so if you're a big nerd, that'll be a good thing to go to. The Young Americans for Liberty at IUPUI is going to be doing Visualize the Debt all week this week, starting Monday and ending Friday on campus. You're going to have the big debt clock, tabling, bunch of materials, going to be educating some college kids.
We're going to be educating. you forgot your G there, genius boy.
Educating. And then also the Young Americans for Liberty at IPUI is hosting the Youth Leadership School. It's the same weekend as the Libertarian Party State Convention, so you'll have to choose which one is more important to you. Libertarian or the Leadership Institute's a great training source if you want to learn how to run campaigns or organize on campus. But the Libertarian Party Convention is great for meeting candidates, voting in the version of the primary. What are the dates for that again?
That is March 23rd on Friday night at 5 p.m. There's a cocktail hour. Saturday day, we have the presidential debate in the morning. Then we have some workshops. And then we have our business meeting, which is our version of the primary. And then banquet dinner with our featured speakers, our gubernatorial and our Senate nominee. And then at 9 p.m. on Saturday night, on the 24th, we have a Jordan Page concert. And I don't know if you've ever listened to Jordan Page, but he's a great libertarian musician. So you should come out and see him.
And if you guys are interested in anything with Rupert's campaign, we're having a survivor.
I'm sorry, who are you? What is your title with the campaign?
Event coordinator.
Okay. This is Jeremiah Hodgkin, if you would like to send hate mail.
Yes. It's chrisspangle@gmail.com.
Hey.
We're having a survivor viewing party with Rupert and a tie-dye grill. It's going to be on the east side FOP. For any details, you can obviously get on our Facebook page at Rupert for Governor. There is a question mark after it.
We'll explain that some other time. But
yeah,
it's going
that's
away.
Long story. That's only going to be around for a little while. And you can get on there and you can find out some details or any other events we're having. But that is next week, and it's only $10. So
what night?
It's Wednesday, the 21st at 5 p.m. to 9:30. Come out, watch Survivor, eat some great tie-dye grill food, and meet Rupert.
All right, and I have an announcement to make.
You're pregnant?
No.
Okay.
But to anyone listening from IUPUI, can now announce that I am running for secretary of the undergraduate student government.
Ah, congratulations.
Yeah, I'm running against a girl.
Statist.
So we'll see what happens. But
should we start an underground smear campaign?
I got my confirmation yesterday, so I'm allowed to talk about it now.
You need Evan McMahon and I to go in there and like do some smear tactics?
No.
All right.
I'm going to be nice.
All right.
But
you young whippersnappers.
If you want to help me out with my campaign, you can look me up on Facebook, and I'd appreciate some help.
How do you spell your name?
Gault, G-A-U-L-T, Chris Gault.
All right, cool. And as always, you can find us at our website, which is wearelibertarians.com. You can get us on iTunes. You can get us on Twitter at We Are Libertarians. And you can subscribe via any RSS feeder on your smartphone, anywhere. We're very accessible.
Yeah, we're even on iTunes, because that's where the cool people are.
All right, well, thank you for joining us on We Are Libertarians this week. We appreciate you downloading and spreading the word and sharing on Facebook. and letting people know that we're out there. Sharing on Facebook and Twitter is really the way we're growing the podcast.
Help us get 100 likes before next week.
Yes, that'd be great. Thank you. Please invite your friends. So thank you for joining us on this week's podcast. Thank you to Jeremiah Hodgkin. Thank you to Emily for sitting in the studio quietly. She refused to be on the podcast today, but she... We tried to get a female on the podcast, the one female libertarian in the entire world, and she wouldn't come on the podcast. So thank you, everybody, for listening. We'll see you next week. Can I help you? What is your title with the campaign?
Event coordinator.
Whatever.
This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.